MUFON Under Siege, Part 2. I'm Jerry Pippin. Our guest is International Director Clifford Cliff of the MUFON organization. It's been around for 40 years. And James Carrion, the former International Director, has been in contact and writing blogs. And he basically is saying that there are efforts to destroy MUFON from inside and outside. And he lays, and I ask him directly in an email, he lays the blame on the CIA, or actually he says the United States Air Force Office of Special Investigations. James would be on the show with us, but he's down in Brazil. Did you know that, Clifford?
Oh, is he? Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, and, he has a girlfriend down there, I understand.
The point here is that NICAP, by the 70s, was in trouble. And basically declining membership, and all because of rumors and reports of CIA agents belonging to NICAP as members. Finally, in 1980, they published their last issue of a news magazine, and they closed their doors. Now, NICAP's back, but not nearly what it was before. Clifford, James seems to think there's an effort to do the same thing to MUFON that they did to NICAP. What do you think? Is something like that going on?
Disinformation, yes, I do. I do believe that. And let me explain to you why. Every time we seem to get close to significant events, and we've had two of them in the last six months that were very significant UFO events, this thing pops up where everybody's trying to attack us and distract us from what our mission is. There's been other things that have happened every time we get close to something, according to John Schuster, a previous one, where things are going along really smooth, we have a great event, and then all of a sudden somebody's attacking us. So I suspect that there is something going on there. We have had government, I don't know who else it would be, government involvement, in, as a matter of fact, in one of our cases in Florida.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We're not finished with the investigation yet, and there's some things that we need to have a resolution to. I can tell you that it was involved a landing, and there were trace elements that were taken to labs, and we've gotten smart now. We now know that we're gonna take multiple samples and send them to different labs, because in the past it seems as though every time we send something to a lab, they lose it.
I've heard that story from others, Clifford. I guess it's just a simple fact of life. These labs do a lot of business with the Defense Department, with the government in general.
We can go with there with what we want. So we now are not even disclosing the labs that we use publicly. There's only three or four people that know who are doing it, and that's at the request of the labs and our request too. So anyway, this case, the material was taken. I'm really shortening this up, and this man that is in law enforcement was told to take all this stuff to MUFON, which we went out and investigated and took the samples ourselves. 2 days later, he came home from work, and his neighbor came out and said, somebody was in your yard, a couple of guys. So they went back to look. His whole backyard was burned.
You mean they just set fire to the grass?
Everything. Torched it.
So they used a flamethrower or something.
yeah. So, now who would do that?
Right.
So yes, we're getting close to things, so yes, we think that this is part of what...
And you mentioned another incident besides this one in Florida. Can you tell me about that?
Chase Kowalski, I don't know if you know Chase. She's our STAR team manager, and of course, the STAR team are the people that can deploy to a site in 24 hours to 48 hours. They have all the equipment they own personally, not provided by MUFON, which we wish we had the ability to do. We don't have the funds to do that, but they have all the equipment, and Chase is, her background is phenomenal. She came from the Department of Defense. She deployed Marines to Afghanistan, Iraq. She is probably the, she and Marie Malzahn, our Director of Investigations, are two of the most hard-charging, qualified people that we have. Their integrity is above reproach. Well, Chase was getting these calls from this guy on a farm in small, outside of a small town in Tennessee about lights in the sky over and over his field at night. So the third night in a row that he called, she thought, well, maybe there's something to this. You know, lights in the sky are pretty tough to handle for investigators because you don't know.
Yeah.
Well, it's just dark. So she went out there and took all of her equipment, or all of her digital cameras and camcorders, and she took the Geiger counters and all of her equipment and went out there, set it all up. She had an assistant with her and the farmer, and she's setting this up, had it all ready to go. The farmer says, well, here they come. Sure enough, here come these lights, and they were watching. They kept getting closer, and this one came over the top of them, triangular craft with three red lights on each corner, right over the top of them, very slow, absolutely no noise, and huge. Well, when this started to happen, Chase ran for her cameras to get pictures, and all the batteries were dead on all of her equipment. That is very typical of close encounters, the electromagnetic aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So they watched it, and then it just took off. So they thought, well, that's the end of that. And so they started to pack up their equipment and go. And as Chase is packing up the equipment and they're starting to walk back, she started getting this sense of dread and fear, of just immense fear. She said it wasn't the normal, like, you know, you feel uncomfortable, somebody's watching you, or you think they are. This was even more than that. It was more significant, she said. And she said to the other two, do you feel this sense of fear and dread that I am? And they turned around to look back to see where they were at with the flashlight. And there within, I don't know whether it was 10 or 25 feet, was this being that was about 3.5 foot tall looking at them. Well, their sense of fear and dread did kick in at that point to a great, great deal.
Yeah, I understand.
They jumped in the pickup and took off to the farm house, and as they were going along, they were very concerned about this, and they were. But then, as typically what happens, Chase said, then we all started laughing because that's the normal reaction once fear is over. Then in a few minutes they said, well, wait a minute, we're investigators. We gotta go back there. So they went back. They could find no trace of the person or the being that was there. They could find no trace of anything else, on the ground. But the lights had moved across the field and were over interacting amongst themselves and within the trees. So that, when you have your star team leader and the field investigator as the main witness to this, that is a significant event.
Where did this happen? I mean, what state?
In Tennessee.
Now, Chase, is she a member of this organization, BAASS?
Oh, absolutely no. No.
Why don't you tell our listeners what BAASS is? I'd like to know myself.
Yeah, Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Science Studies.
Robert Bigelow in Las Vegas is who we're talking about.
Bigelow is the owner of the company, and I don't think he's a billionaire, although he's referred to that. He has spent, like, I think $300 million of his own money in setting up space stations.
Yeah, I guess he owns a lot of things. I do know that he owns a lot of weekly hotels in
Las Vegas, most of them.
He owns a lot of. He's an entrepreneur. No question.
And that gives him a good cash flow at this point.
Yes. Well, in 2009, Mr. Bigelow contracted with UFON to have access to our CMS files, and we allowed him to investigate the good events. Now, Jerry, we will have probably, we average 500 sighting reports a month. Of that, 400 of them we can explain. The other 100 we don't know about. And of that 100, we average 13 to 14 landings or within 100 feet of the witness.
Wow, that many, huh?
Of that amount, we also have 3 to 4 reports every month of entities on the ground. Well, Mr. Bigelow and Bath Aerospace, those were significant events for them. If Mr. Bigelow could discover the technology that propels these UFOs, it would obviously give him a great leg up for space development, because their technology is more advanced than ours, and if his scientists can discover what that is, pretty simple to understand why he wants to know that. If it costs him $25 million or $100 million or $200 million to send up a rocket with his equipment on board, if he can do that for $10 million or $5 million,
He saved a lot of money.
He would be doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Makes good sense as an entrepreneur. So he had a one-year contract with MUFON, which started February 1st, 2009, ended January 30th, 2010. So we have not been involved with Mr. Bigelow or any other contractor for over a year. But what we learned from Mr. Bigelow as funding us to help us and to help him was that we needed a better system. We needed quicker deployment of investigators who had all the equipment. So that's why we set up the STAR team. It has nothing to do with Bath or Bigelow Aerospace. It has all to do with MUFON, all done by volunteers. Absolutely. Jerry, the volunteers from MUFON are just outstanding. And we have some great people out there. We really do.
So you're not using Bigelow anymore. I mean, he's not involved. And Chase is doing the rapid response, for lack of a better term. Where is she? I mean, what state?
Tennessee.
where she had the run-in with the entity.
Yeah. So that's what that's doing. And James did some outstanding work for MUFON when he was ID. He did some.
I was under the impression that the agreement with Bigelow was made when James Kerriam was the ID.
The agreement that we had with Mr. Bigelow was negotiated with by James Kerriam and Jan Harzen. And
the reason I ask that is he seems disenchanted very much about the whole arrangement with Bigelow.
He is, and I can explain that. There were things that happened, let me see how I can say this. So, what happened is, James felt that Bigelow was not, didn't comply with the contractual agreement, and Mr. Bigelow didn't feel that we were probably doing as much as we could either.
And before you go any further, Clifford, I think we need to let the audience know that there was some friction between the state directors and regional and local investigators and Bigelow when they would show up.
That was one of the things that we learned from that, Jerry, is we had nothing in our contractual agreement that said that they had to notify us first before they went deployed with their scientists, and this ruffled some feathers, and rightly so. So now, for an example, our STAR team when they deploy to any state, we've got six regions that they work out of. The first contact is with the state director and or the chief field investigator, so that we can all work together.
My experience has been that the regional people and the state-level people, local people, will move on. The investigators, they all seem to be pretty loyal. I've tried to get information out of people, and they won't talk till they talk to you guys and get it cleared.
Yes, and what we're trying to do, Jerry, is protect the integrity of the witness if they wish to remain anonymous. And if it's a significant event, what happens, we discovered again during the BASS program and clear back to the Stephenville, Texas deal, if we don't have protocol set up and established, it gets out of line, gets out of hand. So we have learned, because of technology today and the quickness of responses that we can do. And the other thing is we have people that will go out and say they're UFON field investigators and get there before we do. And then they get the information, and so now anybody that is reports a sighting, we have to show our badge and our cards as to that we are the people. And if somebody doesn't show them the UFON badge that we have specifically designed for field investigators, They are not a MUFON investigator.
I remember you and I talking about that, Clifford. Some people showed up, and they were not MUFON investigators. I think it was in Georgia.
Yeah, that's right. It was, and according to what we were able to do as investigators, the license plates were discovered to belong of the people that didn't say they were MUFON field investigators, but came in just an hour or two before our investigators were going to be there, and the witness thought we were just early, so gave them all the information. Well, come to find out, it was a government license plate on the car that was parked in front of the house, and it appears now that it was Homeland Security. So, that precipitated the fact that now when somebody goes on an investigation, they have to have an investigator's card and a calling card showing the same thing. So that's hopefully we're learning as we go.
Clifford, I personally think that MUFON is becoming so efficient, and this sounds like Mr. Conspiracy talking, but you know, maybe they're trying elements of the U.S. government. They're trying, who else, as you said earlier, they're trying to shut you down by confusion and obfuscation.
That's exactly right. We even had our office was broken into about 8 months ago.
Yeah, I think they even tampered with your computers, I understand.
Maybe I'm talking out of school here, but there's gossip I hear. We think they did. We don't know for sure.
Uh-huh.
The technology of those people goes beyond our capabilities. So we erased everything, scrapped it. We have all computers now, and we have top of the line.
It appears to me, Clifford, that MUFON is under a very sophisticated attack, not only technically, but psychologically.
Yes, that seems to be it.
I mean, logically, what other kind of conclusion could you come to?
Exactly, and they're able to use these people to incite them to the Elaine Douglases and others, incite them to riot, to cause conflict, to distract us from our mission. I believe some of them are funded and fueled. I know they're fueled by disinformation artists.
I know MUFON is mostly volunteer, but you must have some full-time employees, in your home office here. How many people get a check or, you know, full-time employees?
Yes, that's a very good question, Jerry. I have 1.5 to 2 staff and myself.
Okay.
And we are a nonprofit, so I don't have any problem disclosing this. the secretaries make more money than I do because we don't have the funds to pay me.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting a lot of grief and not getting paid for it.
No. I take that back because this month I was able to take $1,500.
Okay.
So I'm rolling in the money now.
How about John Schussler and the other board members? Do they get money? Do they get paid?
No, absolutely not. Our board of directors have never, I've been on the board since 2000, and we have not received one red penny.
I got an email from a woman who was saying, well, frankly, she asked if you were picking on women. She says it seems like all of the people getting fired, and there I use that term, relieving them from their duties, are women. But that's not true, and Texas is where it started, and those two guys are guys.
Yeah. Sex makes no difference to me. And quite frankly, if it weren't for my wife, who is a female, I probably wouldn't have been as successful in real estate as I was. Women have a tendency, like Chase Kowalski and Marie Malzahn, Debbie Ziegelmeier, state director of Missouri. I could just go on and on. And Lorna Hunter from Minnesota. These are wonderful. They do a great job. Whether they're male or female, I would say the same thing.
Anyone there in your organization at the home office, do they have a security clearance? Reason I'm asking,
well,
they got another job or something. This seems to be a big deal with James.
Well, yeah. I don't know of any. Now, I had one of the things that I've read on blogs that I was an officer in Army Intelligence and far from wrong. I did have a top secret crypto clearance because I was in the Army Security Agency and I got out in 1965. So that was...
It'd been a little while back.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think they still bloused their boots and had... I'm not sure, we may have had brown boots. But...
I was in there in 65 too. I think we did blouse our boots, but I think they were black.
Oh, okay.
We had green at that point. It was all green.
I probably had one brown and one blue, not me. But it was, so I've had a secret clearance, a top secret clearance. I was in the same branch of the military that James was in. James was in the Army Security Agency, and he was a Russian linguist.
Yeah, we've talked about that with you and also with James in previous interviews.
Yeah, we've had that, and I think Tom Dooley worked at the National Security Agency for a while and was, I believe, on a submarine, so I'm positive he had a top secret.
Now, if I were in a psychological operations game, the first thing I would do is try to sow some suspicion there with everybody on the board and who works in the office very closely of each other. In other words, I would plant the idea that somebody there is a mole, even though there probably isn't one.
Do you think there is a mole?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I know all of these people very well, and there is no possibility of them being a mole. Well, now I say that.
You can't. You don't think so. In other words.
I think that. It would be absolutely the biggest shock of my life if that happened.
So the question is, why is James Kerriam publishing things on a blog like he is? I mean, I don't think he's, doing anything nefarious. I think he's just maybe he's disenchanted with some things. And decided to go public. I mean, at one time you two were very good friends.
Oh, he's very. I don't know. I just in knowing James, and I just can't imagine him being involved.
I mean, now James is a skeptic, but that's not bad. So am I.
No, heavens no. Yeah.
Now, I've been corresponding with James Kerriam, and most of it's off the record, so I can't really quote him. But I can give a general idea of what he feels, and he feels basically that MUFON is being attacked by forces from the United States government, within and without, and they're trying to destroy the organization.
Well, that's a possibility that they're trying to, but it's not from within, it's from without. There's people that, as we've discussed earlier, that don't like, maybe we're getting too close to something, so they're going to stir the nest and see if they can put some disinformation out there and cause problems.
I asked you at the top of the show, what in the world is going on at MUFON? We're going to close the show with another question. What in the world is going on in the UFO business? I mean, we have all of these sightings from all around the world, encounters, extraterrestrials on the ground, reports of them at least.
The ETs are becoming more brazen, and we think that they are starting to do some things that making themselves more aware. Maybe they aren't, but with our technology today, we're able to video with cameras, our cell phones, and that type of thing, and we're starting to get some amazing pictures.
That's true.
But again, they, you know, back in the 50s when they were developing the U-2 and the SR-71, the Air Force would release, when these craft were starting to fly across country, they would release information about UFOs being.
Yeah, I agree with that. There's no doubt about it that they actually encouraged these UFO reports.
And I think
as a cover to some black operational planes like the ones you mentioned.
Yes, one of the things that I am a little frightened with the secrecy that's going on within the military. To give you an example of what I'm saying, here a while back, all those birds were dying.
Mm-hmm.
And the ornithologists indicated that it was a blunt trauma that was doing that. I have an acquaintance who is a retired engineer and scientist from Los Alamos. And when he read these stories, he says, oh, that's HAARP, H-A-A-R-P,
uh-huh,
technology. And this very well may have been what the problem was. It just puts up a barrier of some type, harmonic barrier that you can't go through. And he said when he saw that, he says, oh, they had something to do with HAARP. Well, maybe they're using that with the Star Wars to protect us from the UFOs. You see, I'm of the belief of how the government works, Jerry, is that until they're not going to disclose anything to us until they can create a problem for us that only they can resolve.
Yeah, I think that's in the manual.
Yeah, I think so. That's a politician's manual. Let's
uh-huh
create a problem. And then we're the only ones that have.
I'm solution. Also inclined to agree with you about HAARP, but I just can't believe they would do it on purpose, killing these birds and animals and fish. And something must have gone wrong.
Just like that missile that was seen going
out
over the ocean in California, I think somebody screwed up.
Well, now it appears that China might actually be making moves for disclosure to beat the United States to it. You're an international organization, Clifford. Does MUFON have any people in China?
We don't. We do not have in China, but we have 25 other foreign countries or international countries that have members, and UK is big with us right now. China has their own group, and there's a significant language barrier that we have with the Chinese.
Yeah, I don't know how you reduce that writing to print, but I guess they have typewriters or something, or computers that do it. But
so we're pretty limited. I'd hate to see how many keys were on that typewriter.
Yeah.
Speaking of the international community, how about the shakeups here in the States with MUFON? Has that affected your international office offices?
The really strange thing is, I have probably received, I don't know how many, hundreds of emails. My wife says thousands, but probably 100 emails at my home computer in support of what we're doing. I've had six people resign from UFON, and that's it. And they were the ones that were either friends or close friends to the state directors. And we would expect that. You know, you're going to have some attrition. That just happens. But the state directors, all are, the ones that we have are just outstanding, and they're doing a good job. I can't say enough about how much good we're doing, contrary to what some of the people out there are saying.
I think we'll leave it at that unless you have some closing comments or a statement.
No, Jerry, I just wanted to thank the UFO community for the support that we're getting through this difficult time, because our mission is so important. We need to know what this is all about. The sad thing about it is when we discover all of what's going on, well, and maybe MUFON won't exist then. I don't know. But MUFON is a good organization. The board of directors, the state directors, assistant state directors, chief field investigators, and field investigators are doing an outstanding job. And I appreciate you allowing me to say that, and appreciate your concerns for MUFON and your reporting techniques. You're a special person, Jerry.
Thanks, Clifford. You're not going to leave. You don't have any plans to leave MUFON, do you?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Not personal plans. No, I do not intend to be international director forever. That is most certain. But I will stay until I feel like I've done what I can do.
Hey, I thought of a great title if you decided to do a regular radio show with me. Are you ready?
Ready.
Cliff Notes.
Okay. That'll work.
Talk to you later.
Thanks, Clifford.
Thanks,
Cliff.
Thanks, Jerry.
International Director of MUFON, for facing these issues with us. All of our listeners appreciate it. And there'll be more. Unfortunately or fortunately, whichever the case is. It's been an unusual story, and we'll have to watch this to see if the federal government really has its sights on MUFON. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Jerry Pippin. Until next time, cheers.